You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a warm welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. You join us on Wednesday's edition of the podcast where we're looking ahead to the action at Beverley, Hamilton, Haydock, Kempton, Yarmouth and Fairy House. Plenty to come on Racing Radio on Wednesday afternoon. It's Mark Walton, Rory Delaghi and Ross Briley who will be in the studio on Wednesday. But ahead of all the action, joining myself, Sam Norris, on today's edition of the podcast is Mr. Sam Turner. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Sam. You well?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
It's a Sam overload.
It is indeed.
Apologies, listeners.
Double bubble. How are you? Are you well?
Buy one, get one free.
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, busy weekend. Down at Epsom on Saturday, enjoyed the derby. Well, I didn't enjoy the result particularly because I was on the second, but it was a terrific race in its own right, obviously. Good day's racing there and, building up towards Ascot now. So this week's a little bit below par, isn't it? A little bit low key.
Yeah.
And indeed, as is after Ascot, but we've got five sensational days planned next week down in Berkshire.
Yeah, indeed. With regards to the derby, Sam, it was kind of a unique derby in a way this year, given that it was so open and so sort of without a real superstar. There were a lot of good horses on offer, but there was no absolute great. It made finding the winner very difficult for not for a change, but obviously last year we had Golden Horn, who stamped his authority on it from a long way out. And this year it was had a wide open look to it for a premium Group 1 race.
Yeah, I mean, last year looked very much a two-horse race going into the race with Jack Hobbs and Golden Horn. That's how it played out. This year, I mean, I was as confused 5 months before the race as I was 3 months before it. In some respects, I was pretty unoriginal going for US Army Ranger, and I thought he ran an absolute blinding race. He came from a long way back, obviously. I think the ground did for him more than anything. His just wheels were spinning, and Harzand really played to his strengths, his staying, galloping, gritty strengths that he showed in the Ballysacks the time before. His ability to cope with and operate on that really dead ground helped him, and he probably just dented US Army Ranger's turn of speed. But I thought both of them sort of emerged with plenty of credit. Idaho was pretty handy off a very strong early gallop as well. He's run a blinder. And there was one or two bad luck stories in behind. You know, Red Verdon most notably got stopped a couple of times on the rail. The likes of Ulysses just looked a step too far for him at this stage of his career. But, you know, it was a belting race, and it'd be fascinating to see how it plays out as the season wears on as a form perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one to look at, I think. And as you say, plenty of interesting contenders in behind those winners as well. Hard luck stories along the way, as there often is in a race of that nature. In other news, Joseph O'Brien had a pretty decent start to his first official day as a trainer. As you know, he's been training the jumpers for some time now. I think he was solely responsible for the likes of Ivanovic Gorbatov. But first official day holding the licence. Seven runners and four winners.
Yeah, and
not a bad start for Joseph. Yeah,
beat his dad as well. So that'll go down well, I should imagine. I mean, his brother summed it up for me, Donica. He said, look, if Joseph can't make it pay, then nobody's going to be able to. I mean, we have to just temper the wild platitudes with the fact that, you know, the lad is obviously a very talented boy, and he's been around horses all his life, but he's got a fantastic opportunity. You know, not wishing to decry what he's managed to achieve so far, which is, you know, top rate and an excellent start to his career. But as Donica says, if he can't make it, you know, successful, can't be successful, Joseph, then nobody's going to be, because the opportunity he's got there, which is his birthright essentially. You know, he's got a marvellous opportunity, great facilities, and he's going to pick up the ball and run with it, and, you know, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with, no doubt. Be interesting to see how he deals with the bumps in the road, but he's got some very wise counsel in and around him, obviously his father and likes of John Magnier, etc. So, you know, everything's set up for him to enjoy a wonderful career training.
Yeah, as you say, a fantastically unique opportunity for him to walk into the facilities and the infrastructure that he has. But take nothing away from all the hard work that goes on behind the scenes. I mean, it's not all been handed to him.
No, he's still got to do it. I mean, I think Louis van Gaal's proved that. You know, he's won a cup final, but he spent $250 million. He walked into a magnificent operation at Manchester United. And let's be honest, it left everybody cold, his style of football. So, you know, using that sort of sporting analogy, then Joseph's, you know, he's got a great opportunity, but you still have got to deliver results. It's a results game, and he can have all the best size in the world and all the, you know, the best training facilities, but if he gets a bug through the yard and can't deal with that, then, you know, that's going to test him. But it's a good start, and I'm sure he's going to enjoy, you know, a long and you know, successful career.
Yeah, absolutely. Big congratulations then to Joseph O'Brien for his four winners on his first official day as a trainer. Without wanting to wish our lives away too much, Sam, although we are a bit guilty of that in this game sometimes.
I'm not at my age.
Now that Epsom's out of the way, did your focus turn fully towards Royal Ascot? There's a couple of belting races shaping up at this stage. And if we get, particularly St James's Palace, if we get the three main Guineas winners heading there in the likes of the Gurkha, Ortard and Galileo Gold. That race in particular, amongst, as you said, a fabulous week of action, looks like it could be a really hot renewal.
Yeah, obviously a mile on the round track, which will be, you know, slightly different for perhaps one or two of these who are more used to running on straight tracks. It's a different test, isn't it, that round track at Ascot, you know, short straight, and the ability to quicken is probably a major requirement other than that long sort of galloping wind-up style that Ortad showed so well at the Curragh last time, for instance, where he beat Galileo Gold. The Gurkha is favourite with us at the moment, 6-4, courtesy of his French demolition in the Guineas there when he beat First Selection by 5.5 lengths. There were one or two little contrasting reports regarding the time of that race. A few people put into question perhaps the actual official time and the sectional times, but they look pretty special at first glimpse, and obviously the manner of his performance was astonishing. Ooh. So he's very much the horse that's going forward, and it'll be fascinating to see whether there is any sort of momentum built up through the Ballydoyle and the Coolmore runners that week, you know, whether the two-year-olds start running well, and, you know, we see on the first day whether this St James's Palace can go the way of the Gurkha and what the stable are going to manage to achieve, because we've seen once they get on a roll, the O'Brien horses, they just mop up group ones for fun. So it'll be fascinating to see next week. But he's going to have some stiff opposition, Ortad and Galileo Gold, obviously first and second in the Irish. I don't know whether Massart will run after his tough race in the Derby, where he didn't look to get home. Emotionless is in there as well. So, you know, there's all sorts of quality horses, not to mention the likes of Zonderland and Blue de Vega, who both have caught your eye this season at various stages. So, you know, it looks like it's going to be an absolutely fantastic contest.
Yeah, it does. Looks a classic case to me of whether you take what you've visually seen with the naked eye in a race versus the form deeper, because of the three protagonists, the way the Gurkha won in France going away, that was obviously the most visually taking.
Yeah.
But there'll be question marks of how strong the French Guineas form is versus how strong the English Guineas form is, how strong the Irish Guineas form
That's
is.
That's it. I mean, that is, in a nutshell, is how you try and bet, isn't it? It's your interpretation of the form against the bookmakers, seriously. So the Gurkha beat a couple of horses that have been beaten since in Dicton and Zarak. They were third and fifth, respectively. They haven't run badly subsequently, but they haven't won. And of course, First Selection was bang there in second, and, you know, he was sort of running in handicaps last year off a mark of 90. So it just brings it all into question, and it just depends on prices as well, really. I mean, you look at the prices first up. You've got 6-4 of the Gurkha, 130 Ortad, and 4 Galileo Gold. Now, you know, the other two obviously make a little bit of interest at those prices because they're class horses in their own right, especially Ortad, who I felt could be a little bit vulnerable to the likes of Galileo Gold and Blue de Vega last time. And he simply absolutely bolted up and really impressed even more. So he's still very much on an upward curve. And who's to say, if he wasn't trained by Odin O'Brien and not Kevin Prendergast, whether he wouldn't be a much shorter price.
Yeah, correct. Really looking forward to that race, as well as all the action at Royal Ascot to come in less than a couple of weeks' time now. Anything else on your mind, Sam, before we move on to Wednesday's action?
No, just Wednesday's action. That's the only thing on my mind, Sam.
Good stuff. We'll get stuck into it now then. And we start with a race at Yarmouth. Good to see them racing again after the problems they've had. They've got a meeting Wednesday and Thursday, so two-day meeting for them, but great news for them to get it back racing again. We begin with F320, which is a filly's handicap, an extended mile trip here. The dead eight runners line up to contest this one. So that could be a decent each-way angle into this race, Sam.
Yeah, and some decent prize money for this race as well, which has been a criticism of Yarmouth before now, that they haven't put the money on, and that's why trainers have boycotted the track occasionally. Hopefully now they've got the surface right, and those that run the track can actually get some proper infrastructure down, and also get some proper money and incentives there for owners and trainers to actually visit the place, because it is a very fair track. And you know, I know the Newmarket handlers enjoy going there, providing the prize money is okay. So Charlie Appleby certainly is happy to patronise the track, because he sent Blossom Time for this handicap, and I think that she's probably to the four of my shortlist at the moment. Her and Bargain Buy are two horses, obviously, to be very much interested in this contest. Both should be suited by conditions. The return to a faster surface, providing Yarmouth doesn't get, you know, some of these horrendous sort of storms that are forecasting around the country. So that is a big proviso. But she has just looked to get a little bit stuck in the mud at the last couple of times I've seen her at Goodwood. The back end of last year, she probably had a long season, and she just disappointed on very soft ground that day, over six. And then on a comeback at Salisbury, I thought she shaped with a good deal of promise. That again was on soft ground when Dilgura beat her in a strong time back in the beginning of May. But I think with that run under her belt and on fast ground on a flat track over a mile now, I think she can be quite competitive in this 320.
Okay, Sam's thoughts in the 320 then at Yarmouth. We go over to Haydock now for their 340. Another mile handicap for us here. Just seven runners go down to post this time, but some big names in action here.
Yeah, Appleby, Johnson, Sir Michael Stout, you know, Richard Fahey, all sort of represented here. Nasty little heat to get into, to be honest, because three-year-old handicaps at this stage of the season are quite difficult to unravel. I'm just going to go with the last time out winner, a horse that carries a penalty for a good rip and win last week, and that's Carnaggio. I was impressed with the manner that he went through that race. I mean, he did really travel like the wrath of God on that occasion off a mark of 68, which left behind his previous efforts, to be honest, at Nottingham on fast ground, where maybe he just needed the first two outings. And he shaped with a great deal of promise at Ripon, the way that he moved through the race, and quick and clear of quite a competitive field, to be honest. Put six lengths between himself and Mr. Potter, who's not a bad stick in his own right. And you've got the likes of Brioni, who was going there on the back of a good Nottingham win. Couldn't ever land a blow, really. Carnaggio got the race won from a long way out, and I think he could go close to following up here under a penalty.
OK, Carnaggio then for Richard Fahey and Tony Hamilton getting the nod in that Haydock 340. We get into the evening action now, and we go to Kempton for their 8:30, a 7-furlong handicap here on the Poly Track. 12 runners go down for this one. It's very much a clash of the generations as well, Sam.
Yeah, you've got some old stages in here, the likes of Nasri, and of course Corporal Maddox, who still plies his trade to a very decent level. Not a race that I'd probably be looking to bet in. Obviously, Exalted will be towards the top of the list, I would think, because of his run a couple of weeks ago where he was a good, smooth winner. But perhaps take a little chance with Varsovian, who's a horse that's becoming dangerously well handicapped at the moment. He sort of dropped from 86 to 80 in a handful of runs. Renato Souza keeps riding him. I'm wondering whether once Robert Winston gets on, that might be the day that they feel Varsovian can go and win again. He's had a couple of starts over 7 furlongs. He was only beaten a length and three quarter here December 2014, where he ran particularly well off 72. And then a little bit early on in his career, when he was finding his way, he was you know, sort of mid-div in a similar handicap to this. But there were just signs last time that he was starting to just perhaps run into a bit of form. He's been dropped from 83 to 80, which enables him to get into this 0-80. And with Dean Ivory's horses in such rich form at the moment, you know, Soaring Spirits winning for him at Brighton. He obviously had a good weekend with Caspian Prince landing the dash at Epsom and Katarina winning at Lingfield the same day. So I'd just take a small chance each way with Varsovian, but I wouldn't go mad.
OK, Varsovian then, tentative selection in the 8:30 at Kempton. The final race on today's podcast comes from Hamilton. This is their 8:45. Another handicap here, this time over 6 furlongs. 10 runners go down for this one. What do you make of these sprinters, Sam?
Yeah, it's a tough heat. Kenny the captain comes here in good form. I think there's 4 or 5 course winners as well. So it's quite a tough race to unravel. But I think keep it plain and simple. And a horse that looked to have plenty in the tank when he won last time out was Final Venture. He won 2 starts ago here, but he only beat Little Belter, but did it really, really cosily. And then Stepped up to 6 furlongs at Carlisle last time and saw off Manatee Bay, who's a pretty good yardstick in this sort of contest. Thought that was a really decent effort. I think there's a horse called Coptoon who was 3 lengths behind him that day. Switched stables, went to Joe Hughes's, landed a gamble and won first time out. So that's enhanced the form already. And I'd be disappointed if certainly back at Hamilton, Final Venture wouldn't be on the scene in this 8:45.
Okay, Sam taking Final Venture then to get the hat-trick up at Hamilton. Just give us a quick recap, please, then, of your 4 selections for Wednesday, if you don't
mind. Sure. The 3:20 at Yarmouth, like the claims here, Blossom Time, Charlie Appleby's filly. In the 3:40 at Haydock, we go with Carnaggio, the horse that runs under a penalty for a fluent rip and success last time. 8:30 at Kempton, Tricky Heat, very small stakes. I go with Varsovian each way just to perhaps take that step up to 7 furlongs in his stride. And then in the 8:45 at Hamilton, a relatively confident selection with Final Venture, who looks to be going through the grades and improving at the right time of year for Alan Swinbank.
Thank you very much. There we are then, thoughts of Sam Turner ahead of Wednesday's racing. Thank you for that, Sam. Best of luck and enjoy the action.
Lovely. Cheers, Sam.
And remember, you can tune in to William Hill's Racing Radio on Wednesday from 1:50 p.m. with Mark Walton, Ross Briley and Rory Delaghi in the studio to keep you across all the best of the day's action. You've been listening to the Daily Racing Podcast.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.